welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
Okay, so I gotta go. I have a few more days until finally break into Act 2, and then I gotta work on my new review, and then after that, I see these previews for Astro Chain. I'm okay.
Panic!
I need it!
I can't help it. That opening's too good. Can someone build me a time machine to get me to 2 weeks ahead of time, please? I need that game right now.
Hey, Tellius Tyler, you want to know what the sad part is about that movie, that clip that he played?
What?
That actually sounded like him.
Kind of did.
It did.
I need it.
Hey. Let's not bash Warrior Will 2 seconds into the program.
Why?
I mean, this is pretty much. I mean, you guys were pretty much very like excited for 3 hours. Pretty much my reaction right now to Astral Chain right now.
Yeah, that's right. You should be able to express your excitement however you see fit.
Yeah, even when it's wrong. Moving on. no, I'm kidding. You know, I'm excited for Astral Chain too. And we'll be talking about that a little bit later. But of course, Tellius Tyler is also here.
Yes. Fire Emblem is the best game. It's just the best game. It's amazing. I'm still addicted to it. I don't see a time where I won't be addicted to it. I'm so addicted to it, I didn't watch that Astral Chain video or hear that song yet. And
okay.
I really, really need to. I was too busy jamming out to Family Jewels and Adriana Saris' cover of The Edge of Dawn, Fire Emblem Three Houses' main theme. I think that everybody should be forced to listen to that because it's so amazing. Like, the actual song is great, but Adriana always kills all of her Nintendo vocals, and she kills this one again too. But the original version is amazing too. If only Nintendo would leave those videos up.
We'll be going to that too. But yeah, we got a lot to talk about. I mean, I'm serious when we said we got a lot to talk about because we were planning out the podcast, and Tyler's like, "Oh yeah, then we got news on this," and all of a sudden we had like 4 more topics to talk about. So yay us! So let's get it all started off with what have you been playing? And Will, I'm gonna let you go first because you are getting ready to launch a review on this site, and so in very PG to G rated terms, I want you to talk about this game that you know I don't like, but I know that it's you and you played it because you're you, so go ahead.
I feel like this is every one of Will's reviews is introduced this way. I just want to
kind
of
in a way. In a way, it's a running gag here a little bit in the NDP podcast. So,
yeah, I mean, I would talk about your last review, Tyler, but I don't even remember what that was.
Hi-oh.
So, yeah, this next game that I'm currently reviewing right now, of course, naturally in the same realm as Seven Cowgirls Peach Ball. And this was probably a review code provided by D3 Publishers and by our boss, Koopa Keefe. And I'm currently reviewing Omega Labyrinth Life for the Nintendo Switch. And, boy. That's pretty much the best way to describe it. Ooh boy. And the best way to basically describe it is basically as a dungeon crawler. Like, it's a very basic dungeon crawler, to say the least. It's definitely not going to win any awards. I mean, if you know D3 publishers, they also known to publish very niche games, like the Onichanbata series, a very, like, very budgeted adult hack and slash with sex appeal. And, of course, other, like, niche games in niche genres. And Omega Labyrinth is your basic dungeon crawler. Basically, think of it as like in similarities to Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, like back in the DS days, if you can recall that.
I do.
But basically replace the characters with pretty much busty girls. And overall, again, it's a very basic dungeon crawler. It's nothing like too grandiose. It's like very, very straight to the form of dungeon crawling, just basically control your characters and like manage your moves while you travel the dungeons. And it's basic. It's definitely basic. I mean, obviously, where it exceeds is based, of course, the best fan service. And the fan service. Again, I'm trying to keep this PG, but there's, let's say, like the visual novel aspects, the CG of every, including the characters, is like, wow. And this is on a Nintendo console. I gotta give props for Nintendo giving the go ahead on this game. I mean, you thought Peach Ball was pretty extreme. Please try Omega Labyrinth Life, which like the CG and the scenes is like, yeah, really. That's like very very tongue in cheek, but But again, it definitely delivers on the fan service. Gameplay wise, it's solid. I mean, it really is dependent on if you like the dungeon crawler genre or not. So I'm currently writing up the review right now, but overall, I'm enjoying it for what it is. I mean, it's not perfect. It's definitely not going to win any awards, but it definitely has its appeal for the niche genre. So definitely look forward to review. I'm trying to like speed this review right now. And of course, naturally, I'm just playing a little bit of Fire Emblem Heroes to get actually try a bit of the lore thing, which is like interesting. Like you set up your
It's weird. It's like you have to remember like all the characters from one of the games and everything. Like, oh, they're in this region. Like, okay, who came from that region again? And then you get like one orb, maybe if you get enough experience in the lore. It's just like, okay.
It's more of like a long term kind of deal. Like you set off on the character's main game. I mean, you could sort it up in Origins. You could put Marv and Sita into that line and just like put in for 20 hours, which again is more like a long term play instead of like the usual short term with like other quests and all that. So that thing I'm just like trying. I was like, yeah, nice little thing. Like in case you want to just set it and forget it. And of course, tonight is going to be the Choose Your Heroes Legends banner coming up tonight. So
yes,
I can't wait for that. Of course, yep. I'm going to choose my queen, Camilla. So yes.
Gosh, Tyler, that's such a shocking development. We should take a minute and contemplate how absolutely shocking it is.
Stunning. The
that
only
he went
thing
with Camilla.
More stunning is that Camilla actually has a really cool outfit. Like it's
she does.
Awesome. Like she actually looks great. I'm shocked. Yeah.
It's
they
like,
went tasteful.
It's weird that, you know, they use Camilla in a non-fan service way. I mean, what are the odds?
I'm surprised Will is not disappointed, though. I mean, I expect...
Oh,
here's a big surprise! That's an incredible... I think I'm gonna have a heart attack and die from that surprise!
Yeah, that's pretty much that.
Thank you, Gilbert. okay, but yeah, again, check out his review. Hopefully he'll have it up soon and, you know, be warned about what's going to be in it. Because I've seen some of his screen grabs because he can't help himself.
Oh, there is a clip I should say, which I think maybe a little bit too not safe for work, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, don't do it. All right, Tyler, I know you've already said what you've been playing, but enlighten us on your recent adventures.
Well, you know what, I'm going to surprise you. I'm going to change gears for a second, because we talked about Fire Emblem a lot, and I did my homework. I played as Hero in Smash for a little bit.
Nice.
And you know what? Overhyped. I was wrong. I reacted to Twitter clips. I obviously, I'm not a pro player. I don't know how great Hero is. I don't think he's that good. Like, he's not bad. He's obviously solid, but he's so RNG based. I actually think he's really fun to play, but this character is slow. He has good ground speed. His air speed is horrifying, and his moves are all very, very slow. You see a lot of clips of him getting super early KOs. Most of those moves do not come out as fast as you think that they do. His lightning move where he sticks the sword up and has the bolt come down and then he swings in a spin. That move does like 30 damage if it hits. But if it hits is the key word, because you have a lot of time to see it coming. It's not a super great move. And the same thing with his fire blast, which is actually a solid move. But again, very slow, very blockable. Where he gets you is with his down B, and he has a whole bunch of different options with certain percentages of things that'll show up. But you have to hope that you get something good in that option or something that's relevant for the moment. And I guess even maybe not quite as pressing at a super high level, but if it's the fourth choice, you have to scroll down to get there before you can pick the one that you want. So there's a lot of time for the opponent to read, okay, he's got thwack on, I better, you know, block or not go near him right now or attack with a projectile or something to force him out of that so he can't hit me with that move. And hopefully, and if he were to hit, he could kill you in one hit. But again, that's also percentage based. So I find Hero to be an interesting character. There's a huge debate right now because Leffen, one of the top Melee players and an Ultimate player, has been demanding that they ban the character because he's RNG based and he's not good for competitive play.
I can understand that.
I could too, and I don't hate that idea because, again, it would be really annoying to play against a hero and best 2 out of 3, and then he goes Hocus Pocus and gets a Mega Mushroom, and then you lose because he hit you once with a forward smash at 0, and then you're out of the tournament. Like, that's not – I totally get that. That being said, at the most recent Smash tournament, Super Smash Con, there was not one hero player who made the top 64. So that's – you know, he hasn't taken over the competitive scene yet. And I do think that's because consistency matters, and he's not a consistent character. Yeah. As many times as you get a Mega Mushroom, you're also going to get a Mini Mushroom and lose in one hit as hero. So yeah, you take the good with the bad. I don't know if they need to ban him. I don't think he's going to be that popular, honestly.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, I've also been playing Three Houses, of course.
Oh, really? Can we get the Iago clip again? No, I'm kidding. Don't do it, World. Don't do it.
I'm doing the Edelgard route, and we've all got to the end of part one. At this point, fair heads up, we're going to talk about part one spoilers.
Yes.
Without chains. It's been 3 weeks, people.
Yeah.
So I'm on the Edelgard path, and I'm going to side against her this time when she is revealed to be the Flame Emperor. Because I am really curious about the church path. There were a few questions in Golden Deer that I wanted to see answered that I think the church can answer, specifically about Rhea, who, when I was thinking about it after our show last week, she reveals a lot, and I wonder, like, I know a lot of how she knows these things, but I want a little bit more from her. So I'm curious to see how that path goes. And then I also was on a mission to recruit every student. And I feel like when you're playing the Black Eagles and you want to side with Edelgard, you have to just go all out scorched earth and just go pure Black Eagles, only Black Eagles members.
That's what I'm doing.
And yeah, I might get Lysithia on my crew because I love her. But her aside, when I do the Black Eagles run, I'm just going pure Edelgard, Hail Edelgard.
There's that reference.
Yeah, I had to squeeze in the Dorothea C support.
No, you need to sing it though.
No.
Go, Todd, do it. You gave us a teaser, do it. Go all the way.
Hey, little girl. No. Long may she reign.
No, you gotta do it in your girl voice. You gotta.
Oh, okay.
Oh, God. Hey,
little girl. No.
Yeah, that was good. That was better.
I mean, the only song that actually I prefer more to that from Dorothea is actually Annette's little tummy tum tongue song from that food combo with, I think, Marianne, I think. That from Annette. I love that little tummy tum tum song.
Oh, yeah. I saw that on Twitter. I haven't gotten that one unlocked yet. But...
All right, well, as for me, I've honestly been in a weird place because last week I was doing everything in my power to get work done because I went to a Comic-Con over the weekend and I had a great time, and I saw a kid who dressed up more or less as an Inkling from Splatoon 2. Yeah, and she was on Team Chaos, unfortunately, but we talked about, she had like a really good hat, she had like the long drooping ears, it was really cool, and of course Splatoon 2 shirt, so we talked for a while. That was really fun. Not a lot of other Nintendo cosplayers. I saw Mario. And one girl was dressed up as Link, so there was that. But you know, outside of Splatoon 2, like that was the best one for me. But I have been advancing in my Edelgard run. I am getting closer to the part one break where I will be doing Hail Edelgard. And like Tyler noted, I am doing the all Black Eagles run with the exception of Shamir. I drafted Catherine in the last one along with Dorothea, and so now I'm just drafting Shamir. And ironically, you can't draft Catherine in the Black Eagles run, which makes sense given what's going to happen. But and then in the next route, I'm gonna probably draft Hanuman and Alois just to, you know, balance it out to see what they're like. But we'll see how it goes. But anyway, I think one of the, and we and Tyler talked about this to death, because, you know, we've actually beaten a run in the game, is that, you know, the differences in these teams is quite interesting, because I didn't notice at the time, but I had to replay a paralogue that I had because I had Dorothea. I thought it was only because I had Dorothea and Ingrid that I could do this level, but no, as long as you have one of the two, you do this paralogue, and I remember it being a little easier with my Blue Lions team, and... even though I had Ingrid again, it wasn't my Ingrid. Like, my Ingrid was a little bit more powerful and everything, but still, it was a little different. And then I just did the paralogue mission with the Sothis in the Red Canyon, and I, again, remember that one being a little easier with my team. And my team is more balanced than my Blue Lion squad. Like, the lowest level I have, I believe, is level 18, and the highest I have is, like, level 22 with the main character, Byleth. So, and Edelgard, obviously. Hey, Edelgard. But I'm working really hard to balance the team. And even with that, and I'm on the higher difficulty this time, so that might be a little bit reason why. But I'm having to strategize this a little bit more to try and do it. And thank goodness I got Shamir, because with all those hawks, it was just, I had her with a brave bow. Her with a brave bow, just picking them off one at a time. And Bernadetta was a really big help, too. But I had to do a lot of Mila's turn wheels. Or, sorry, Divine Pulses. I don't even know why I said Mila's turn wheels. It's like, we were talking about Echoes, I guess, earlier. But I had to do the Divine Pulses a lot for that one. But it is more difficult on the higher difficulty, Tyler. I acknowledge that.
Well, whoa, what a shock. It's more difficult on the higher difficulty.
Well, there's one thing that I don't think you realized in that. On the easier difficulty, the auxiliary battles, some of them don't charge you a battle point.
Right. That's, yeah.
So yeah, I didn't know that going in. And so I thought, oh, I could still grind the same way. No, I can't. I have to be a little more methodical with it and trying to do the higher level battles. And, you know, I'm still crushing a lot of people and everything, and it's fine. But then I'll get like that Red Canyon level where the monsters are everywhere and they got them dumb shields, which is a great gameplay mechanic. But if you, for whatever reason, if your characters just don't want to do a lot of damage with that shield up, you're kind of in trouble. So
the biggest key, and I just a little tip for everybody playing, make sure everybody has a battalion except Felix.
Right.
Felix is the only character who doesn't want a battalion. Every other character should have a battalion equipped, especially for those battles, because I had the same experience on my first run through that you're having now on that battle, Todd, where I had to use the Null's Turn Wheel. I'm going to say Null's Turn Wheel 100 times because it was so challenging. And I couldn't figure out, okay, like, how do I hurt these guys? But after giving everyone a battalion, I don't think I ever even had to, like, deal with a counterattack, because we could just shatter their shields in one round. I'd have, like, I just strategically set my guys up around them to encircle them and then do, like, a disrupt one way, disrupt another, and then disrupt another way, and that would break all four of the things. And then the enemy can't move or attack for a turn, and then you really just can free kill them.
My difference. I keep forgetting I have gambits.
Yeah, you have to.
That is vital in the higher difficulties. And also a tip as well, because like I notice mostly on my playthroughs, is that when you're trying to break those shields, you usually either use the poison arrows or the blaze ability ambits to actually really shatter the shields. Because like if you do like the normal disturbances or the normal attacks that just like strikes them, it does stun them. It doesn't have that full armor break ability. So like I suggest like use blaze or poison barrel to actually full on break the shields, where you actually see the enemies actually spinning red stars instead of the usual yellow stars.
Duly noted. So, but I'm very eager to see what the back half of Edelgard's run is, or the pure Edelgard run is, because you know when you play her run, it's hard. I'm glad I didn't play Edelgard first. Just because, you know, you kind of get the feeling, you know, just based on her conversations, that she's not exactly good, but she's not exactly evil. And you're like, she's going to be
so evil. I can't believe even her run, like, so I read, like, people who defend Edelgard, and I should really do a whole piece on destroying Edelgard. Because, yes, she has a perspective, and when you know her character, you get where she's coming from. And I love her. She's a great character.
She is. She's a great character.
It's definitely like kind of that one clip of like, you were supposed to be the chosen one.
Right.
Yeah. Even balance the walls, not destroy it.
I hate you.
It's pretty much like that. Like everybody loved Edelgard. Like, are we bad guys?
Right. Like, yeah.
Pretty much.
In the beginning of the game, when you get attacked by those bandits, you don't realize it until the second playthrough, because there's so much happening the first time through. But Edelgard was the person who sent those bandits to attack you.
Yep.
In the very beginning of the game, when you meet the three characters, and she sent them to kill students, specifically. She tells the bandit, goes, you just hired us to kill as many nobles as we could. And, like, that's Edelgard. Edelgard hired them to kill students. And when I think of that, I just, how dare she stick somebody on my boy Lorenz? How dare she?
No, Lorenz Helden Gloucester.
How dare they?
She is arguably one of the most complex lords in the history of Fire Emblem, and that's just the truth. And yet there is good in her. She does care for her teammates to an extent. She does care about people to an extent. Oh, okay, you'll like this, Tyler. Do you want to know who I think Edelgard has the same ideology as.
Her and Claude have very similar ideas.
No, I mean, go beyond. I'm talking all franchises in history. Oh. There's a character who she really models.
Hmm. Well,
Apocalypse.
Ah, okay.
Survival of the fittest.
Yeah, yeah.
Screw genetics, screw upbringing. If you can be the best, you get to live. That's basically her creed. Because she's tired of the crests and nobility deciding everything. If you're you should get rewarded for that. That's basically Apocalypse minus the genocide. But hey, yeah. Aelgard's working up to that.
Well, I love how they worked. So many games with characters that even characters I really like they're just like that, and it's not what made Edelgard feel that way? And there's a reason. She has a backstory that explains why she feels that way, and it's very cool.
Yeah, and that's why I can't say she's fully evil. She is definitely darker than
right.
Yeah, but it's curious thing. Okay, we'll stop here, but I'm seriously still enjoying it. I still find myself trying to get done. Like today I was trying to get done with work so I could have an hour of Fire Emblem before I ate and watched another show when we did the podcast, and then I'm already planning on what I'm doing after the podcast, which will involve more Fire Emblem, because this game is so addicting.
Yes. I have to give one more shout out.
Go ahead.
So in the previous episode, I said I didn't like the Black Eagles as much as the Golden Deer. That is still 100% true.
And that's fair.
I've called Ferdinand Discount Lorenz so many times. And that's true. Lorenz is still better. But I kind of like Ferdinand now. He's kind of really, really funny in his supports.
Well, it's we talked about last weekend. There are every character when you first meet them is so basic. You know, Aelgard's the leader who's trying to control her family. Dimitri's the noble trying to live up to a legacy. Claude is the goof, you know, who just happens to be a leader and all that stuff. And then you get into their support conversations and you let the story unfold. And every single one is deep in their own way. I mean, I didn't like Caspar when I talked to you guys last week because I was only a few missions in with him. He's still my least favorite, but I respect him more because of his beliefs about, you know, getting better, working hard, and he has a great conversation with Edelgard where she's talking about, she asks him, he's got a brother who has a crest, which is basically the shining mark in this society, and she goes, wouldn't it be better if you had a crest? And he goes, yeah, maybe, but I'd still be doing everything the same way. I'd still be working hard to prove myself, and it's just I can find respect in that, because he believes in working hard to do his part. So
the Black Eagles do feel like more caricatures to me compared to the Golden Deer, but they do still have that depth. It's just their quirks are a little more accentuated, which is fine. It just depends on what you like.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I had a conversation between Lindhart and Hubert.
Hubert. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Hubert. Sorry, Hubert. And Lindhart describes why he's so good at sleeping and resting, and he compares himself to an animal, and he's like, I'm just the guy trying to conserve my energy to the right moment.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that. We're going to continue talking about this game up until Astral Chain and beyond, but so bear with us. We're kind of hooked. We're hooked on a Fire Emblem feeling. All right, so we got a lot of news to talk about today. Some big recent stuff, some interesting stuff for the future and beyond. So, it's time to go down the warp pipe. And, kid you not, just before this podcast went up, we got a glimpse, at least, at the NPD reports for July in the United States. And Fire Emblem, number one! Dang straight. Okay, there's rumors that Madden actually beat it, but we're going to discount Madden because that's not a real game. All right, no, just kidding. There's conflicting reports. One says Fire Emblem got number one. One says it got number two behind Madden. I don't really care. All right, it was on the top of the charts. It's clearly the one of the best selling. It's clearly the best selling exclusive game, bar none.
Yeah.
So, and according to the NPD reports, this was the best-selling Fire Emblem launch in U.S. history.
By a lot.
Yeah.
Tripled. Yes, tripled, according to Nintendo Life. I'm quoting exactly. Yes, tripled. The previous best-selling Fire Emblem launch, Fire Emblem Echoes, Shadows of Valentia. That's the third time I've seen that. I cannot believe that.
Yeah.
But if Fire Emblem Echoes actually was the top launch for Fire Emblem in the US, we have great taste, America. We did it. I love you.
Yeah. And they went on to note that Three Houses is already the second best-selling entry in the franchise and should eventually overtake Fire Emblem Awakening, which, if you recall, had 2.1 million sales in like its first month, which helped revitalize the franchise.
Yes. Awakening, so, I think, sold maybe even over 2 million at the end of the day.
I'm looking it up now. But it's already the second best, it obviously means it's already got over 1 million units sold, and it's easily on its way to 2, if not more. So I'm looking it up. But this... Okay, we're not kidding when we said like the last 3 weeks or so, we've been looking for any and all reports about Fire Emblem Three Houses and how well it sold, because we were wanting to know that if it was a success. And we saw that Japan, it did well enough, and then England or UK region, it was huge. It was like it spent like 2 weeks on the top, which was awesome. And then you heard rumors about how well it was doing in, you know, the US, but you didn't really know. And so, you know, it's good to know that the hype was real, you know?
Yeah.
And
our friends lists are not misleading, because I don't know about you guys, but my friends list is just literally everybody. Fire Emblem Three Houses, Fire Emblem Three Houses, Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Yeah. Oh, it's
one of those, like, Smash Brothers. Yeah, Smash Brothers.
Yeah, okay. As of December 2014, the game had sold just over 1.9 million copies worldwide. So, and I know it's got over 2 million because I remember seeing an article about that. So, yeah, if it's already the second best selling, that means it's like close to 2 million in 3 weeks. So, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, and it also should be noted that the NPD reports does not include digital sales, which I've told were actually quite significant.
Because they had those vouchers.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the digital sales are probably abnormally high for this game, given the timing where Nintendo had that promotion. You could save like $20 if you went digital. So
yeah,
that's very, very helpful.
Yeah, and then so hopefully we'll get more finite numbers soon enough. And then, and remember, this was just the NPD for the US. It's not counting the other regions, I don't think. I think it might for the, you know, already the second best selling entry, but still, like, that's very impressive.
So does this mean the final DLC character for Smash can be Claude and no one can complain? We get Claude. It. He's riding the Wyvern in his personal class. Oh, God. I'd main Claude. It'd have to be a Claude main.
I mean, okay. I'm not gonna admonish him. Well, I also want to note that I had to look up the word admonish.
Oh, yeah.
For the tea party. Okay, I thought it meant something totally different, and then I looked it up and it means scolding. I'm like, crap, I was scolding all these girls for... I thought admonishment, like, to discourage, but no, it's scolding harshly. I'm like, oh, crap. Anyway.
Why is that even a choice? I can't imagine any student wants to be admonished.
Well, I'm sure there's some sadists in the group. That's just how it is. Anyway, but I'm not going to discount the fact that we could have a Fire Emblem crossover, but, I mean, it's not going to happen. Going back to what you told me, like, it's... seems really clear that it's all third-party characters because of the whole Smash Bros. Ultimate cross, you know, Persona, Banjo, Dragon Quest, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I don't think it will, but I guess the next Smash Brothers game would be coming out at this rate. It'd probably be the launch title for the next console.
Right.
But you never know. We'll just have to see. But continuing on with the NPD results, the Switch was obviously the number one selling hardware in the U.S. So it is it's also the hardware sales leader for 2019 as a whole, which I actually find significant. Not just because the Switch has had really great games this year, a little bit more consistently than last year at this time, but you know, the PS4 especially has had some big titles come out. It had Kingdom Hearts, it had Resident Evil, Mortal Kombat, Madden obviously just came out, and so it had, you know, the potential to sell even more, and it just broke 100 some odd million sold, so it's like one of the highest selling consoles of all time now. So it's clearly doing well, but the Switch is just doing better because of course it is. Anyway, and then my personal favorite outside of Fire Emblem, it was revealed in the NPD numbers that Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3: The Black Order was the number 4 selling game in the US. which I love a lot because I loved this game. Sorry, Diego, your review was wrong. But yeah, it was only behind Madden, Fire Emblem, and Super Mario Maker 2. So, I mean, I'm not expecting, you know, 5 million unit sales from this game, but if we can get even a million and we get Marvel Ultimate Alliance 4, book it. I want it. I want it now! So, actually, just looking at the NPD results, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6...
Yeah.
Seven Nintendo exclusive games on the top 20 list. And then there are a few that are technically multi-platform. So, go Nintendo. Go Nintendo. Go Nintendo. Again, we're very happy about this. And again, once we hear definitive numbers on Fire Emblem Three Houses, which again, it's easily closing in on 2 million by now, has to, we'll let you know. So, moving on, as hard as it is. We have the new Nintendo Switch Lite that is out. It has... Oh, wait, actually, was it the Lite or was it the better battery one?
The better battery.
Better battery.
It was the better battery
the Lite
one.
Doesn't come until, I believe, until September.
That's
or,
right.
October, yeah, roughly.
Too many Switches. Anyway, but... to recap, this is the same Nintendo Switch. It just has a better battery life to it. So if you recall... If you have, like, a game, like for me, when I play Fire Emblem Three Houses, I could play it for about 3 hours before my battery dies. Well, this one is supposed to double that, if not more. So, that's pretty good. Which I now kind of wish I had, but even that, I wouldn't play Fire Emblem for 9 hours, or 6 to 9 hours. I mean, I would want to, but even I would be like, I gotta savor the experience, you know,
I've been hearing some things regarding to, like, the extra battery. I mean, it's a nice thing to have. It's just an add-on, and plus, I already also heard that, I believe GameStop and some retailers actually were offering trade-ins to the new model Nintendo Switch, so in case you want to cap that slight upgrade, I mean, it's a nice thing to have, especially with that extra battery life and extra time to play, but, I mean, for me, I'm just, like, waiting for that upgraded official Switch Model Pro until, like, yeah, that better upgrades, better frame rates, all that nice jazz.
We'll see, but, you know, hopefully we'll get more news and updates and potentially the Switch Pro thing, whatever. But if you haven't gotten the Switch, I definitely, you don't even have to ask for the new one. It's just, you know, I guess you just have to make sure, I suppose, it's the newer model, I guess. I don't know if they're marketing it, like on the boxes, you know, any differently.
I think the box is more red.
It's more red.
It's more red.
Yes, because the other box was red as well, but I think this one is even more red.
Yeah, good. Yeah, the new Nintendo Switch has battery power, and it's even more red. There's your marketing for you. All right, so as Will was teasing earlier, Astral Chain has been getting more updates. The producer actually did a nice big blog on the character designs for the Legions and the characters. Definitely worth the read. And then we got a video reveal of the opening to the game. They went full anime.
It's just really amazing. Like, it has that certain element of cheesiness. It definitely gives me the feel of, like, old Power Rangers episode back in the day. Is that certain cheesiness, but at the same time, you don't really mind it just because it's, like, it is reminiscent to a kid show /, like, Sentai film shows that you watched back in the day. So I did not mind this opening, and it's just so catchy.
I liked it.
It was just so catchy. During the entire day, I was just basically putting it on repeat just because it was so catchy. Is like, I don't know, like, when I heard it, it's like, wow. Like, that's one thing I like about Platinum Games. Like, that, I've seen that the previews are currently out right now for many different outlets. And, like, that's one thing I gotta preach about Platinum. Is like, you expect them sometimes, they are indeed, like, the king of the action games, but from what I've heard, like, they're basically really switching things up. I mean, from new, since their last part
up.
Of, like, switch things up. sure.
No, never mind.
It's basically, they really are, like, yeah, they're just changing up the formula of, like, how this game is going to play. You think of Bayonetta, you think of Nier Automata, or all their other games. But apparently, they really are changing up a lot of things with this game. And just looking at it, I mean, like, from what I've heard, the consensus so far is basically a very close comparison to Wonderful 101, but with that blend of Bayonetta action games that they're known for. But yeah, just this opening just kind of, like, really, it pumps you up, honestly. It just really pumps you up to get ready to just head into this game. And plus, the fact they also revealed the voice cast of this game along with that like intro screen is like, that was perfect. That was absolutely perfect.
Yeah, that was pure anime. And then I want to note for a record, I kind of got the names mixed up. I thought that the character name was Brianna Knickerbocker. And I'm like, I mean, I guess that sounds anime. And but no, that's actually the person doing the voice acting.
That's the VA. That's the
My
VA,
bad.
Yes.
But yeah.
And I'm just glad like they also had like many other like top names as well, like Elizabeth Maxwell, and also have Cassandra Lee Morris back again, like who you probably recognize her as Linley Koo in Xenoblade X and as Mona in Persona 5, as well as Sophis in Three Houses as well. So that's
really
I'm just glad.
Wow.
Yeah, like Cassandra Lee Morris is also back. So I don't know, like just seeing these voice casts, and also I'm not sure you spoiled yourselves, guys, but like they also showed a little bit of the first opening acts, like introducing the blade and including the doctor, professor, something. I forgot his name.
But it's okay. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, like that first opening acts is like it will lead into our main topic for tonight. But like, oh boy, it's like definitely gives you something to think about.
Yeah, the marketing for this game has been on point. I mean, we're seeing a lot of excitement for it on Twitter already, and I do think that it almost sounds ridiculous, but I think the success of Fire Emblem might even benefit this game because everybody's playing their Switch now, and right when people are finishing with that game, this game's going to come out.
And they're both
have the Japanese style, so I think Astral Chain's going to be a really big success.
I would hope so, because it might lead to more Switch exclusives from Platinum, which we're still waiting on Bayonetta, but you know we know they're making more after that, so you never know. But again, 2 weeks to go, and then we'll get to hopefully hear the wonderful things about Astral Chain.
Woo!
Now, while Will is excited for that, as am I was also happy to find out that we are getting more details on Shantae 5, and it is now called Shantae and the Seven Sirens. And WayForward, the developer, revealed a whole bunch of new information on the game. Quote, formerly referred to as Shantae 5, Shantae and the Seven Sirens sends the belly-dancing, hair-whipping half-genie hero to a tropical island where Shantae and her friends encounter other half-genie allies. But they soon learn there's a trouble in paradise. As Shantae gets caught up in the island's sinister secrets, she'll use all new dance abilities and instant transformation fusion magic to explore the non-linear, interconnected world where she'll visit multiple towns, overcome treacherous labyrinths, and battle dastardly bosses. The game also features a new collectible card system that grants players the freedom to augment Shantae's powers to suit their own style of play. So, So they're going all out for this one. Now, if you recall, Shantae Half Genie Hero was a Kickstarter project that got really good success, and then it came to the Wii U as the first console game it got, and then it expanded out to the other ones, including getting ported to the Switch. And the sales were just really good. The buzz was positive. I refer to it as possibly the best Wii U game, at least of the year it came out of, if not one of the best games that it was on the system. And it was just so addictive. Like Tyler talks about, you know, what was it, Edge of Dawn?
Yeah.
From Fire Emblem. Dance Through the Danger was such an addicting song for me that it was on my YouTube playlist for quite a while. It was just very, very fun and addicting, and Shantae as a game was just very, very fun. So I am already looking forward to this. We already know it's coming to Switch and other consoles, so hopefully we'll get a trailer and more, and then eventually when she's announced for Smash Brothers, we can rejoice even more. It's been confirmed, guys. It's in the anime opening. It's there. Look at the window. She's coming. So
You know what it's actually going to be? They're actually, for the indie rep, they're going to bring Madeline from Celestin.
Oh, gosh.
That's what
I mean,
going to do.
That wouldn't be the worst thing, but no, I don't think she'd fit. Well, it's just like there was also rumors about Undertale being in the game. And just like,
yeah, they're not
no.
going to do an indie rep. They're not going to do it. But they did, I think Shantae would be on the short list.
It was basically her Shovel Knight. That was the short list. And then Shovel Knight was an assist trophy. Okay? So, but again, I'm excited for this. I know Will is excited for this because he likes Shantae. So, yeah, and I like the idea this is going to be another non-interconnected game world where, you know, there's like a lot of hidden things and you could choose your own path. So it's looking fun, and I'm excited. So, yay. All right, next up, we got, okay, this is Rumor Central, but it's a good one. Banjo-Kazooie is getting canceled from Smash Brothers. I'm just joking. I wanted to see how Tyler would react, but I couldn't even go through with it. I'm sorry. No, there is a new rumor stating that Banjo-Kazooie could actually be coming out in September for Smash Brothers Ultimate. And I want your opinion on this, because they aren't exactly consistent with how they're announcing when they're releasing the characters. Because Joker got announced in December, and he came out in April. The Hero was announced in June, and then came out in July. And so Banjo got announced in June also, so is September really out of range here?
I don't think so. I think September's probably right. Now, I know there was a specific date. I think it was
September 25th.
Yeah, so that I'm not sure if it's going to be the 25th. I do think September seems appropriate to me, because they said it's wrapping up by February of next year, is at least on the initial projections. That could always change.
Yeah.
But I think that they're on schedule. If they launch Banjo in September, they would have to launch one character or two characters 2 months apart, instead of continuing with the three with Joker kind of was 3 months after Plant, and then Hero 3 months after Joker. They would need to do Banjo either in October and then a character in December and a character in February, or Banjo in September and then a character in November and then a character in February, or, you know, you could do the math. So I do think September's reasonable. Long story short.
Yeah. It's a complicated thing. First of all, it's from 4chan, where you know you really can't trust. But then again, they were also the first people to, and you know it's true, but they were also the first people to spread the rumors about Banjo in Smash Brothers. So, you know, Broken Clock and all of that. But and then they were like, there were some people saying that, you know, the 25th is a Wednesday and they wouldn't release a character then. Yeah, they have. Joker was Wednesday and Hero was a Tuesday, or one of the, or the vice versa, whatever. So they're clearly not opposed to releasing things in the middle of the week. So that's incredibly possible. And like Tyler said, at current projections, the final DLC characters are supposed to come out later this year and early next year. So they have to get Banjo out eventually. And so it would be 2 months after Hero. That's plenty of time to play him, enjoy him, and wait for Banjo. So it could happen. But
we're
going to
get a September direct as
we have
well.
To.
Eventually.
And in that, I think there could be the shadow drop of Banjo, or what they've been doing, they'll do a demonstration and then a couple days later, they'll drop them.
So.
Right, and I think they probably got to wrap it up at the Game Awards back in December with the last character, I feel like.
That would be cool. I like that. But and you're right, we got to get a Nintendo Direct soon. It's the middle of August somehow. And, you know, it's been over 2 months since E3, with no other direct since then. So, hopefully. I know some friends of ours won a Astral Chain Direct to talk more about the game, but we'll see if that happens. And then, if not in August, yeah, definitely September, because by that point, we're getting close to the end of the year. And, you know, we've got to start prepping for 2020 and what's coming out there, which we only know a scarce amount about. So...
Mm-mm-mm.
We'll see, but I agree. September would be fair. If not, then obviously October, because then you'd have one in December to celebrate the holidays, and then February to wrap it up. But as in all things, it depends on Nintendo and Sakurai. Yeah.
right.
All right. Now, this next piece of news I'm very excited about in an offhanded kind of way. It was announced today that E-League and CBS are going to show a special kind of documentary series about the lead up to the Nintendo World Championships that happened this past June at E3 weekend. It goes, the press release read, E-League and Nintendo are partnering to, oh my gosh, they misspelled partnering. Never mind. Partnering to showcase high level players in exciting competitive moments through a 3-episode E-League television series focused on 3 tournaments held in Los Angeles in June 2019. E-League presents the Nintendo 2019 World Championship, set to premiere Sunday, August 25th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on CBS. It will take fans backstage and behind the controller with professional players as they compete across 3 Nintendo Switch video games, Super Mario Maker 2, Splatoon 2, and Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. It will feature teams from around the world, including Japan, United States, Europe, and Australia, New Zealand. And then there will be more episodes in September, apparently. So, we're getting Nintendo on CBS, guys! That's huge!
It's cool. I just... I wish that Nintendo listened more to the competitive Smash community before making, because their tournament, I believe that tournament had items and all sorts of stuff that the top players, like MKLeo, did not compete. And like that's what I think would be really interesting, is to see, you know, Tweak and Leo and all those top Smash Ultimate guys in their set Smash Ultimate tournaments. I feel like Nintendo trying to do their own thing here is shooting them in the foot, as it occasionally does.
It's definitely an interesting move. I'm glad like there's more games taking some news, especially like on a network like CBS. So Nintendo and CBS going collaborating, showing off like a bit more of the gaming thing. And I mean, not to go political, but of course with the recent like tidings of like gaming and the world right now, it's like, I don't know, it feels like it's very good news to like actually put a spotlight of how gaming can be a beneficial force in our society.
Yeah, no, agreed. It's a great point.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. There have been like Disney XD especially have been doing, you know, more focusing on gaming and lead ups, and they've been showing some of the championships, but for CBS to do it, that's saying something. I mean, whether it'll be watched, I mean, it's on a Sunday, for gosh sake, but, you know, just the notion that they think that Nintendo is worthy enough of any time for them is pretty cool. And if this gets enough, we could see more Nintendo on television, which you know they're going to love.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I would love to see Nintendo finally embrace the actual Smash community. I know right now in that community there's all sorts of nonsense and drama and kind of just serious allegations of crime just at the top level running rampant, so I get why they wouldn't want to, but I hope that really both the community cleans up their act and Nintendo recognizes just how much potential there is for the competitive side of Smash. I mean, unsupported by Nintendo, as we talked about last week, it was by far the biggest game at Evo. Like, yeah. Without any support from the developer. And like, you look at what Capcom does for Street Fighter, they always are out there promoting. So there's a lot Nintendo could do with Smash that when the time is right, I hope that they finally do.
Yeah, it's just, I'm excited. I mean, I don't even know why exactly, you know, I'm excited so much. I mean, I might even forget this happens by the time we get to August 25th. I mean, it's going to be a long 10 days,
yeah.
But it's just funny. It's just fun to think about, you know, we're getting Nintendo, even though it's an old tournament, you can look up the results. There's going to be footage you haven't seen. It's going to be, you know, a look at these players who you probably don't know. And, you know, you're watching them battle out at, you know, on E3 weekend, which is probably one of the best weekends of their lives. And it's just a really cool feeling about that, I guess. So. All right, now, another story that I'm very happy about, even though it's technically not Switch-related, but I have to talk about it anyway. THQ Nordic, who has been making games for Switch, has revealed some of their upcoming titles that they are in development of, and one of them is the confirmation that Saints Row is coming back. And for those of you who don't remember, I worked on the Saints Row franchise during the third game, Saints Row the Third. And it was the best summer of my life. Lots of food. I mean, gaming. Yes, totally not the free food that they let me stuff my face with. Such good donuts. And unlimited pop, but that's beside the point.
Did you say pop?
Yes,
I know
pop.
You're from that area. That's jarring to me. I've been jarred.
Do you call it soda?
Yeah, I apologize to our East Coast listeners for Todd.
Don't you get started, Mr. Mario.
Yeah, well, that's how you say it. So,
that's not how you say it. It's Mario.
Maybe. Yes, Will, yes it is.
It's not
your
New Jersey boy. It's Mario. R-E-O.
What was that word that when DKDJ was on, that word that he said that you guys were, it was like really funky. What was that word?
Oh, Malay? Are you talking
Malay.
About
oh
Captain Totoro was on and we said Malay?
Yeah. Malay.
That one's not a Jersey thing. That's just a childhood R click thing.
Okay. I know, but that is still like, don't talk to me about how to say things when you say Malay.
Yeah, well, you know, Malay's going to catch on, though.
No, it's really not.
back on topic. And
Saints Row is coming back, and they're apparently the team of Volition, who I worked with, are already deep into development of the title. Very exciting. Hopefully we'll get a Switch port, but that's not a guarantee. We did get Saints Row the Third. ported over for some reason to Switch, so that was really cool. But yeah, I can hope.
I honestly kind of wish for another Saints Row game, because just like we're kind of in that age, like, of course, with like GTA and all that, like, we have these good games, but again, I just kind of want that one series, like the Saints Row. Like, it's just pure fun, just overall ridiculous fun. Is like, of course, you want to get the noisy cricket in Saints Row? Sure, have a big giant plastic bird. Weapon, sure. Or just like do a DDT on an unsuspecting civilian, sure. It's just like, yeah, like that's one thing I really appreciate about Saints Row. It's just like they know how to have fun, which I think right now, I think we can definitely use a game like that right now.
I'll abbreviate this story really quick because it's too long to go into full details. But I was in college when I was looking for a summer job, and I needed to get an internship at a video game place, and I couldn't do it in Chicago because I wasn't going to be there for the summer. And Volition is, like, no joke, 15 minutes away from me. And my mom was like, why don't you just apply there? And I go, there's no way they'll accept me. And she goes, just apply. And so sure enough, there was a QA tester position there. They called me the day after I applied. When does that happen? All right. So I do the interview. I think I did all right. And I'm dead nervous because I never done anything like that before of that capacity. And about 5 hours later, they call me back and they go, hey, do you still want the job? I'm like, yeah. He goes, great.
No, a lot's changed in these last 5 hours.
You never know. But yeah, I got the job. The ironic thing was apparently they were going to hire two people ahead of me, but then they had to back out. So it's like, it was fate. And I was dead nervous because when I realized I was going to be playing, they were working on two games at the time, Red Faction Armageddon, which honestly didn't do well, and then Saints Row the Third. And when I found out I was working on Saints Row the Third, I'm like, oh, crap, this is a GTA game. And at this point in my life, I was really against M-rated titles. It was a personal reason. I won't go into it. But I was really scared because I'm like, I don't want to play a game where I'm just needless gratuitous violence in, like, the worst way. Because, again, I was thinking it was GTA.
Go into it during our main event tonight.
Oh, we will. You're right. Good point. But that's a different topic, and I promise you that. But anyway, but I got into the game, and it was just so enjoyable. Sure, there was gratuitous violence, but it was so cartoony. You know, it was almost like Deadpool comic level of cartoony. It's just like, oh yeah, this isn't meaningful at all. I'm killing zombies with a tank. What do you want from me? You know, and that's why it was one of the most enjoyable summers of my life. I beat that game so many times over the summer. Blazing through the storyline, blazing through the side missions, blazing through all the other things, and I never got bored. Such a good
game. It's just
so,
like, it's definitely ahead. Like something in the missing. I just wish they had. I'm just wondering, like, as you said, it's like very similar to Deadpool. Do they have chimichangas?
No, but they have I can't say the restaurant name on this channel, but they do have a restaurant that they love that is kind of like their chimichangas.
Ah, yeah. Nice.
Yeah. But the best thing, and I mentioned this in a previous podcast, I believe, was that the best thing about Saints Row the Third for me was the radio. And not because they had a bunch of channels with a bunch of licensed music that they got. They did, like, news ads on the radio that tied into the world itself. Like, they had a show called Nightwing, and it was a vampire superhero show, and you worked with the star, and so you got to hear previews for the next episode after every chapter. And that was hilarious. And then there were commercials for venues that the bad guys, because they helped control city. You know, you got to hear their commercials about, like, what they were doing and everything. And it was just, they didn't have to do that, but they did. And it just made the world. It was a Fire Emblem thing, basically. They made the world deeper by doing this little thing, and I love that. So, I do hope that Saints Row 5 or whatever they're gonna call it, it comes to the Switch so I can enjoy it. So, good luck, good luck, Volition. All right, to wrap up, we got two Tyler pieces of news. I'll let Tyler handle these two. Nintendo Music. Tyler, break it down.
Yes, so as you may have seen on the Kotaku article that did not cite our NEP podcast Twitter handle, which they should have, Nintendo has been cracking down on YouTube channels that post their music. So if you're like me and your favorite thing to do when you're bored and doing work on your laptop is to pull up some Super Smash Bros. On Gilva Sundner's channel, for example, Nintendo has been copyrighting all of that stuff. The Edge of Dawn Have to Drop It One More Time. That original version of that song I had been jamming to, and they continue to take it down. Fortunately, the good people of the internet don't give up, and they just keep reposting it. But Nintendo is just everywhere. The Nintendo ninjas are striking, and if you have listened to Nintendo music on YouTube, odds are you're going to be having a tough time doing that, because they are after it right now. Fortunately, I don't think they're allowed to, like, ban covers and stuff like that, so you can still, if you're like an Insane the Rain fan, they're good. But yeah, so Nintendo's done this a lot in the past. They always, it seems like every other year they do this, and then the channels kind of repopulate once the heat's cooled off. But I don't understand why they do it. I know that, you know, it's their music and they can do what they want with it, but they don't make it available anywhere else, and that's why this is so frustrating to me, because I would certainly, I mean, I pay for Spotify, but if Nintendo wanted to put their music there, I'm sure that they could make some money doing that. If they put their music on Apple Music or wherever, there's a lot of people who like that stuff. Those channels get huge hits, and I know Nintendo doesn't want them profiting off the music, but and that's fine. Just make it available through your own channels. I mean, make a Nintendo official Nintendo music channel on YouTube, and you can make the ad money that way. It's very frustrating to me.
Yeah, I agree. Like, there are, like, a couple of soundtracks that are currently up for physical sale, like with the Splatoon 2 soundtrack. Like, of course, we get, like, different, like, I mean, I'm not sure, aside from Splatoon 2, I'm not sure. There's really, really rare times when Nintendo, like, releases full-fledged soundtracks. The most we get, like, is either from, like, pre-order collector's edition that has, like, only a sample soundtrack, like with Smash Bros. Or with Fire Emblem. Like, it's really kind of frustrating that we only get, like, just these samples, and we got, like, I don't know, got to wait at, like, a year or 6 months for a full-fledged soundtrack, and maybe that's only rarely in Japan. So, like, that's kind of one thing that I appreciate, like, YouTubers uploading, like, full track lists of the game music, because, again, like, what's this music piece that gets me so pumped up, and, like, oh, you got it, thanks, thank you so much, YouTube. But no, Nintendo just want to shut it down again. Like, really, I try to, like, this is how you get exposure. I mean, sure, it's, like, kind of like, there are people writing on your coattails, but at least you get people more aware, more exposure to your music, and perhaps even more sales. So, like, it's kind of like that, like, very reminiscent to the whole Let's Play of Nintendo games back in the day, but now they've eased up on it. So, regarding the music front, is, like, Nintendo, like, this is how you get more audience, this, like, have more people, like, know about your products. If you don't want, like, perhaps they will just discover your music, like, somewhere randomly, and then, like, who knows, maybe buy a game in the later on down in life. So, I don't know, Nintendo, like, come on, like, if you're gonna really do something official, then yeah, either, like, release a full-fledged song, like on Spotify, like, with, Jump Up Superstar, or, like, do something like that. It's just, like, make it more available, don't just, like, sit on your laurels and just, like, sit on a literal mountain of soundtrack, which is pure gold.
Yeah, I like the idea that Tyler had. I mean, the idea of an official Nintendo music channel on YouTube was just brilliant, and they can make money off of that. They just put some ads on it, and then you know that millions of listeners will listen to that. I mean, Tyler will give you a million listens just on Edge of Dawn. So.
I will. I swear. That song is so good. The way the original singer, like, the pain in her voice, I love it. Gosh, amazing.
Yeah. So, like, why not just do that, Nintendo? I mean, yes, it's your right to take down the content you think is violating your copyright laws, but the only reason we're doing it is because you're not making it available to us in the first place. It's not like the Smash Bros. Trailers where we can go to, like, four different channels who have approval and all of that. You know, we have to look for these ourselves. So if you make a music channel, you'll get the views, you'll get the listens, and then you just grow it, and it'll probably be, like, you know, a super massive channel with, like, 10 million subscribers eventually. You're freaking Nintendo. So, I mean, why do this? Why take it down and ruin everyone else's fun and spoil Tyler's day? I mean, have you no
shame? I know. Thank you. Yeah, it's an outrage. The other piece of my exciting news is that Celeste Chapter 9 Farewell, as it's called, is nearing completion. So it is, I think they said they're actually just going through the upload process. So it should actually be available in the next week or so. There's no official time. I don't know how all that stuff works exactly, but it should be available very, very soon. I I immediately got misty-eyed when I read that. I'm so excited for it. So apparently there's like 100+ screens in this final level, so it's no wonder it took them so long to build it. But there's a few screen grabs out there, and just the art style, the overall tone, just from the visuals. I'm very excited for it.
I haven't seen you this excited since you posted your Celeste review.
Oh, that might have. Oh wait, did I post that? No.
No.
No. No. 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10. Best game ever.
Don't push it.
It actually is the best game ever. But you know. Some people might say it's a top five or so. I guess if you say top five, I could understand.
Top five, top 10. Oh, also, before you go on to main event, I meant to mention something during the Astral Chain segment. Will, you compared the anime opening to a Power Rangers kind of thing?
Right.
Okay, well, me and Will have a shared love of an internet show called Death Battle. And the recent Death Battle episode was Ghost Rider versus Lobo. Amazing episode. Go and watch it. I'll do my Nicolas Cage impersonation for you later. But the next battle is a matchup between Mechagodzilla and the Dragonzord from Power Rangers. And so when Will saw this, he went to our Discord chat, and he goes, "Hey, the next matchup is Mechagodzilla versus the Green Megazord." And I'm like, "No. No. It's the Dragonzord. You just insulted an entire fan base in two words." Okay. Green Megazord. The frick is that? It's the gosh dang mother freaking Dragonzord. Okay. That dagger flute I still have. I have my original dagger flute from 25 years ago, Will, and it was one of the reasons I wanted to play the flute, because I wanted to be like Tommy from Power Rangers.
Mechagodzilla is going to destroy him.
Nope.
Oh my gosh. Mechagodzilla is going to wipe the floor. I wrote my 8th grade, I had to write a persuasive essay. I wrote it on Godzilla versus King Kong, why Godzilla would clean him up. And I will once again put my pride down on it. Godzilla wins it in a laugher. It's a blowout. Godzilla crushes.
It's Mecha Godzilla, though.
Mecha Godzilla crushes, yeah.
Oh, please.
It's still in the form of Zilla.
Yeah, Dragonzord's going to win hands down.
Boy, this is going to be interesting.
The power of Tommy compels you. And no, I don't care that he lost his previous death battle in the Tiger Zord. That's not the Dragonzord. I'm just saying. Anyway, but I just wanted to call out Will's stupidity when it came to Power Rangers. Green
Megazord.
Excuse
me, Princess.
No, don't say excuse me, Princess. Say excuse me, Tommy Oliver. How dare you? You insulted Tommy. You insulted the Dragonzord. You insulted your mama. No, I'm just joking.
Let's get dark.
Yeah, let's get dark. Okay, so during our playthroughs of Fire Emblem Three Houses, we noticed that the game is much, much darker than previous Fire Emblem titles, which is saying something, because if you think about it, a lot of Fire Emblem titles have very dark elements, but it felt to us that Three Houses has a little more of a consistent darker tone. And then when you look at Nintendo as a whole, they have tried to, you know, emphasize darker tones and themes in certain games or franchises that they feel could represent it well, or at least attempt to. So we're gonna dive into what we think about these mature themes, these darker tones, and what they all mean in a Nintendo discussion. I think it's ironic we're doing, you know, a Nintendo discussion with the theme being Godot, who is one of the darkest characters in the Phoenix Wright series, but that's just me. Alright, so I'll kick this off because this was my topic. We're not going to go into character spoilers, but let's just say that there's a lot of very dark, dark backstories in Fire Emblem Three Houses that you find out via the support conversations, which on one hand is amazing, because this is why I love Fire Emblem as a franchise, because they really go deep with their characters, especially, you know, Awakening, Fates, and Echoes, and now Three Houses. So they don't just appear superficial caricatures. I always have trouble with that word for some reason. But between the blue lions and the black eagles, especially, which is the characters I've played with, there are some incredibly dark and I would even go disturbing backstories. And it's just like, I want to know what led the writers to go this dark. I mean, are they trying to tell us something? Are they trying to vent about their childhoods? Do they know people that this went through? Because, I mean, this crap is dark, dog.
Can confirm, Marianne and Lysithia in The Golden Deer, also very dark.
Okay, you talking about Lysithia, especially, because of her, how it ended with Claude. So, yeah. But, like, still, You know, it's just like they went so dark with these characters. I mean, they could have easily skated by with, you know, loose backstories and they still would have been decent enough characters, but they went so deep and sometimes so dark. I mean, there's talk of, you know, kidnappings and attempted murders and, you know, other violations that shouldn't be in video games, honestly.
Suicide for some characters.
Suicide and you know, lots of family deaths, which you say, oh, well, that happens in every Fire Emblem game. Well, not for certain characters, not like this. And it's just, you know, and while it definitely lends to the story, especially for certain characters overall, it really shook me in a certain way that, you know, this stuff happened. I even took screenshots just to prove that it happened because I was sure that no one would believe me unless you played the game, which now we know millions have. Thank you, Gaming World. But, you know, it's just weird. In a way of how dark this is. I mean, especially when you compare it to certain other Fire Emblem titles where there were, you know, the occasional dark stories like Marth's father getting betrayed and killed, you know, Marth going into exile or, you know, Grail dying in front of you by the Black Knight by getting stabbed through the heart. You know, that was horrifying enough. Or Elwood killing an Indian and all that stuff. You know, that was dark enough, but that was like fantasy dark.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. And you knew you could have a happy ending.
Yeah, more or less, but yeah, but then you look at, you know, like what they did with Three Houses and, like Awakening with Emerin and her death, or should I say, her, should I say her fall from grace? Or Tyler will appreciate this one. One of what I feel is the most disturbing moments in Fire Emblem Fates was Ryoma's seppuku.
Oh my god, that was a great scene.
That was a great scene. Right, great scene. But it's just like, do you think that Fire Emblem, and we're obviously going to go into the Nintendo franchise, but do you think that Fire Emblem is just better suited than the other franchises to deal with these like very mature and dark themes, despite it technically being just a teen game?
Because again, Fire Emblem is more or less, again, it has that medieval settings. I mean, again, due to the popularity of recently, like, Game of Thrones, of course, everybody wants that, like, really gritty medieval. Because, again, gritty medieval things, like, very reminiscent back to, like, the Dark Ages of, like, the Renaissance. Like, the Black Plague, Joan of Arc, the Burning of Joan of Arc. All these different tales, including, like, other medias, like in Berserk. I mean, Berserk is actually was quite dark in the medieval realm genre. And I don't know, for Fire Emblem, it just kind of really works well. Just because, like, one, it is the realities of war. It is, like, regarding to how much can greed really push humans into, like, conducting such evil behaviors? Even, like with Edelgard's backstories, like, wow. Like, it goes, like, real full end to it. And, of course, like, with other franchises in Nintendo, it's, like, it feels like Nintendo's kind of adapting that, like, Disney mentality. Like, incorporate, like, so dark themes, like, with death, like, having your parents die into, like, stories by Nefit. Like, with, like, I don't know, like, Thousand Year Door and other, or even Twilight Princess. It feels like there's a lot more things that Nintendo has a subtle trait that's very similar to Disney, that they slip in like very dark themes, but in a sense it's very digestible for like general audiences, which is quite amazing.
Yeah, I think that Fire Emblem is more prone to these darker themes because it's a character-driven game, and especially as you said in the more recent entries, it's really the focus has become on those relationships. And I think anytime you have something focused, a story focused on character, if there's not that edge to it, it's not going to be an interesting product. I think that that's a lot of what people didn't like about Fates, for example, is its characters did not really have that emotional depth that they did in Awakening, and that they certainly do in Three Houses and Echoes. So yeah, I do think Fire Emblem is more prone to it. That being said, I think that a lot of Nintendo franchises should shift in that direction while also keeping, you know, the classics like Mario, really that has no business ever telling a gritty story. Outside of, you know, the Paper Mario games, you could tell creative stories with some dark undertones. But those games should always be bright and cheery on the surface at the very least.
Of course. I still remember... I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Well, no, you're good. You're good. I'm finished.
It's like, yeah, like I still remember, like, I think, yeah, Super Paper Mario, regarding to like going over their underwear, like When was the last time you actually have a Mario game that went to the underworld? Which is like, wow. Actually,
yeah. Talk
about heaven and hell is like, wowzers, wowzers. So
that game,
like,
tells you a huge story, like a dark story about love and loss and all that. That, like, it's a very dramatic game, and it's a Mario title. But on the surface, it's still very bubbly and happy. And as, like, I forget how old I was when it came out. I was, like, maybe in high school, so maybe a little older. But my younger brother played that game, and he was an elementary school student. And he didn't pick up on the darker tones of that game, but he loved it. So Mario games, the RPG versions, can have darker stories. Just, they have to be, with some nuance, you know?
So, like, now, so, yeah, so I definitely agree that I think Fire Emblem, because of its more medieval fantasy nature, there is, you know, that the ability to go, like, super dark with your stories at times, while not being, you know, super mature, even though they definitely, especially in Three Houses, they talk about very mature things. Like, I'll always remember King Ashnard from Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn. He appeared to just be this mad, you know, king who was just trying to get the world into war, and then you find out all the dark things he did to try and secure his power and also, you know, bring chaos to the realm, and you're like, that's dark, dude. I mean, he literally killed like 30 members of the royal family via tricking his father to bring a curse upon them. Oops.
Wow.
Right.
And then he killed his father just to end the curse so that he couldn't die himself, and then he took the throne. It's just like, that's dark. Yeah.
That's vile.
Yeah. And then he seduced, apparently, the dragon princess, and then once he found out that she didn't have any power because she bore her his child, he took the child and abandoned her. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Louise.
Like I said, I love King Ash, Mad King Ashnard. He's one of the best villains to me in Nintendo history. But
when he took the child, he I think he abandoned the child.
Yeah, eventually.
The child is you know.
Yeah, still out there.
I mean, but, again, you see these kind of stories, again, it's like, really remind me of, like, Zork's levels of, like, darkness, of dark themes, you know.
And then you get into, like, the other Nintendo franchises, and you do see traces of it, like, Zelda with, I would say, Twilight Princess and Breath of the Wild, even, I mean.
Oh,
Link's, like, quote-unquote, death scene. You know, like, he's broken, battered. You see the Master Sword as you've never seen it before. They're literally saying Link's about to die, and then Zelda saves him, and then, like, Zelda breaking down because she feels that she's useless and she can't save everyone like she was told that she was supposed to. That was pretty deep and dark. And then you hear about some of the stories of what happened after, you know, Ganon was sealed away and all that. And then Twilight Princess with the, you know, the transformation of Midna from, you know, the princess into the imp, and Zant, you know, basically being a, what do we want
Matt
to call
tyrant.
It?
A Matt Tyrant.
Well, not that, but like a sadist, yeah, masochist,
sadist
contortionist.
Is the word. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
But like he was that, and
if you're talking about Zelda games, because you're right, I mean, Twilight Princess, very much a darker game. Breath of the Wild is, it hits you with big emotional moments every now and again, but for the most part, I would say it's almost in that Super Paper Mario area where it does have dark undertones. But it's still an accessible game for children to appreciate. Majora's Mask is an dark game that you can't. When you play that game, you're like, "Oh wow, this is a dark game." Like the moon is crashing into the earth, and everybody's going to die. And the story is seeing how these people are dealing with the fact that they're going to die in 3 days.
Yeah, I'll even go Ocarina of Time.
Oh, yes, yes.
Because when you go 7 years later, everything's screwed. Okay.
Right. Like, you see the town desolated, all these re-deads you thought they were actually living beings. It's like, like, you see these, like, almost like as it is, monsters, to the point, like, wow, these, like, the death, humanity, just, like, how much is, it's just, like, it's eerie. It's very eerie.
And then, like, you see, like, a Darunia, he dies trying to defeat Volvalaga, and he acknowledges that when you see him again. And then there was the Gerudo who helped you out in the 70 years prior, and then she gets transformed into an Iron Knuckle, you know, and then she just disappears. And it gets dark at times. And, you know, with Nintendo, you always see them as this, you know, kid-friendly, you know, let's-a-go, you know, company. And, you know, when you see, like, a game like Kirby, which I guess can get dark, maybe in certain ways.
Rarely.
Rarely, if ever. And, you know, that's very much lighthearted and cheer. Like, they couldn't get away with a dark Kirby storyline, and that's okay, because that's not what Kirby's about. And then you see something like Zelda, you see something like Metroid, where yes. Samus, in the much-hated Other M, was basically diagnosed with PTSD and acted like a victim, which upset a lot of people in the right and wrong ways. And, you know, like, but they dare, I mean, Team Ninja, they dared to do it. You know, there's like, you know, she would be affected on it. And if you've seen the manga of Samus in Metroid, okay, she gets her whole planet wiped out in front of her, and Ridley threatens to eat her. And so I would say she has PTSD. I'm just saying. So,
yes.
But is there a limit that Nintendo should be wary of? I mean, and I'm not even saying like the cross into M-rated games like with Bayonetta. I mean, that's platinum games, and that's
right.
But I mean, if we're talking pure Nintendo, they may have gotten close theme-wise to an M-rated title, but they've never made one themselves, to my knowledge. And that was always third-party titles, which they allowed, like Bayonetta, like give me some others. Metal Gear, they allowed Metal Gear on there once. That was M-rated.
Mortal Kombat, obviously.
So, you know, they allow M-rated games at times, but that's them saying, oh yeah, we acknowledge this is your title, we respect you. But do you think there's a line that Nintendo themselves shouldn't cross in order to, you know, be, you know, trendy or Game of Thrones?
That is an interesting question to think about, because like it in media today, I feel like a lot of people, like, of course, throughout the generations, it's going to be changing, like, what is, like, quote-unquote accepted, or what is, like, basically okay to be expressed, because, again, freedom of expression and all that.
Right.
Regarding to Nintendo, it feels like, in my opinion, I feel like they they're like Disney in a sense. They can express ideas that even like, to the point that edges to that territory of, like, to the point of being adult themed, but never fully grown across the line. Like, again, they explore with death, they explore with like hell, even sometimes even religious topics that like you never thought like some companies would explore, but Nintendo of all things, they can explore like even touchy subjects like religion, politics, or even some sort of things. So I feel like Nintendo definitely has that possibility, and I feel like they could definitely express themselves to that point to push that edge to it. Even if it means causing some controversy, because again, like, I still remember, like, with Pokemon, they said it's basically the work of the devil, which, again, that's really insane. But Nintendo, going full M-rated, I mean, there is a possibility. I mean, I won't rule it out in the cards. They can definitely maybe really shed that kid-friendly image, but again, they've always been more fun about it. But they have that talent of, like, blending it. So they know how to explain a story, but never going full cross line. But I feel like they can definitely push the edge to it, it feels like.
Would I love a Nintendo M-rated game? I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to it right out of the box if it's a creative game with good ideas. I think that, and this is a non-answer, but I think that Nintendo should let their developers make the games that they want to make. There's a culture at Nintendo that Miyamoto talks about all the time that he's a big part of the executives squashing the developers' ideas in favor of their own ideas, sometimes in the name of creativity, other times in the name of, we don't think this is going to make a good game. And I get that, and a lot of the time I'm sure that that saved us from some bad games, and that quality assurance has proven a positive for Nintendo in the past. But I would hope that if a first-party developer from Nintendo had an idea for a game that was an M-rated title, that they would say, yeah, you know, go ahead and make it. I don't know what Daemon X Machina is going to be rated, but there's a chance that that could be an M-rated game, just depending. It looks like it's going to be T, but I'm not 100% sure on that yet. Do I think it's smart? Not necessarily. I think that Fire Emblem Three Houses does a great idea, or does a great job of showing you what a mature Nintendo title is like, and same for Majora's Mask. Games that a game doesn't have to be rated M to have dark tones and to be
smart.
And to push the boundaries and make you think, okay, after I played this game, wow, that impacted me and changed the way I think. I mean, that's been proven time and time again. And I do think that Nintendo benefits from kind of being the good guy in the industry Will alluded to it earlier. The political climate right now, people blaming video games for mass shootings, ridiculous as that is, there's a real threat that uninformed people with power could come down and clamp down on the industry. And just from a pure numbers perspective, Nintendo being able to say, look, our games aren't like that. Look at our games. They're positive and they're wholesome titles. There is something to be said for that. So I don't think that we'll really be seeing Nintendo cranking out M-rated games anytime soon. And I think that that's probably smart.
As in all things, there are lines. And a great example for me was, I told you guys earlier that I had this big fear/hatred of M-rated titles. Mm-hmm. And then this game called Mass Effect came out. And I look back and I remember the struggle of wanting to play the game, because all I heard about was how amazing this game was. But it was M-rated because they had the lovemaking scene between Shepard and the various people you could have.
Liara,
slash her.
Really just Liara and oh man, what was her name?
Ashley.
Shoot. Yeah.
Caden, technically. You know.
Yes, Caden too.
I'm just saying, if you played as a female, you could have did it with Caden and everything. Unlike most males who let him die so we could be with Ashley. Moving on. So you know, but I remember, you know, the struggles. I'm like, I want this game, but it's M-rated. And I said I would never play an M-rated game. Then I talked to my parents, and they go, Todd, as long as it's just this one weird thing, like this one scene, then we don't care. And I go, okay. So I play the game, and I love it. Then Mass Effect 2 came out. It was M-rated. I loved it. Got the Metal Gear Solid collection. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and now I got you know, Saints Row the Third and Saints Row 4, and you know, I still don't have a lot of M-rated games, but I'm not as afraid of them as I once was. And if I ever got Mortal Kombat, which I was tempted to, but I'm kind of glad I didn't because I have the Switch. But, you know, I would have enjoyed it despite all the bloodshed, because I'm like, that's just a Mortal Kombat game, and I can respect that. If Nintendo was to make an M-rated title, it would have to be one that would be justified in both its tone and why it's M-rated. And like Tyler said, you know, they don't have to do an M-rated title just to have a dark story, as you know, things like Three Houses has proven. Would it be interesting to see them go that dark? Yeah, it probably would. And technically speaking, like Disney, apparently, I found out today, has released R-rated movies in the past. They have, or better yet, they've distributed R-rated movies in the past, I guess you should say. But just like Nintendo has. And so it might be a challenge for them to see like what they would do with the M rating. Do I need it in my life? Probably not, but you know, there are themes and things that I think they could have fun with if they have the right team and the right people behind it, you know, and they're not doing just gratuitously, you know, they're just diving into the dark themes that sometimes happen in our world, you know, and you know, that can be sometimes admirable, but you know, there's just always this line. There's this line of like, what is gratuitous, what is pointless, and you know, what is good. You know, when I think about Mass Effect, I don't think about, you know, the lovemaking scene and, you know, the partial nudity that happens and blah blah blah. I think about the deep story and the characters and the action and the elevators. Always the elevators.
right. And yeah, just I mean, back there that time, it's like, again, it was just really blown up to the point of just falsification because of like the media outlets. They thought it was explicit sex scenes. Like, no, it was never the case. And again, it was reviewed by the ESRB ratings, and it doesn't show anything explicit. So again, that's kind of like one thing. And going back to like on like the possibility of Nintendo going M-rated, I mean, it's kind of like with you and me, Todd, regarding to like, again, you don't like sexuality. I love my fan service and thing. It's like, it's kind of in a similar realm in regards to that. Like,
I like how you refer to it as fan service when you're talking about you.
Well, again, I'm pretty much the fan service guy here in any podcast, so thank you very much. So,
okay, I just need to clear one thing up. The P stands for podcast. The NEP is the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. The extra P on the Twitter handle is just because NEP was taken.
Yeah.
We all always say NEP podcast, and I just want to clarify that it's just the NE podcast, but NEP podcast does kind of sound better.
Gotcha. So, like, we're winding back. Again, it's kind of, like, similar to, like, you don't like fan service. I like fan service. Like, it's just kind of, like, in that same realm of, like, does Nintendo want to, like, really, like, do they want to expand the points? Like, do they want to, like, really delve into it? Because, again, there's a lot of things you could definitely explore more if you have that bumped up age rating, but at the same time, you don't want to be, like, a whole Duke Nukem Forever, like, and then, like, yeah, just kind of, like, really bog it down. Again, Nintendo has that image of being a kid-friendly thing throughout these years for good reason, and yes. But now, with the Nintendo Switch and all these recent games that have, like, really approach that line of, like, perhaps becoming an M-rated game, is like, I don't know, it feels like there is that chance, like, because Nintendo is growing up, like, again, it was definitely different compared to, like, the years back in 1990s. So perhaps it's trying, like, changing that image, changing that, like, mentality of, like, actually approaching dark themes, sexual themes, all that sort of, like, because, again, we are growing older now.
Yeah. Okay, really quick before we end up, I want us really quickly to talk about one theme, sure theme that we think would be fun to talk about, or sorry, fun to see in a future Nintendo title. It doesn't have to be an M-rated one, but, you know, like, just a Nintendo title. For me, even though Pokemon Black and White weren't my favorite of the Pokemon titles, I did like that they talked about Pokemon basically being slaves.
Right. That is the easy one. Yes.
And I would like to see that explored more. Like, but not just with an evil group, because we found out that Team Plasma actually didn't believe in that. They were just using it to stir up, you know, the people and distract people from their real goals. I want to see someone really try and liberate Pokemon in the guise of them, you know, trying to save them from being slaves. And I want that to be addressed more, because, you know, I think that would be a fun element to talk about. Like, you know, is it just, you know, they just happen to be capturing them, kind of like we have pets, or is this really a master and servant kind of situation? So I think that would be a fun one to tackle, like, really, really tackle the idea, because obviously that's the only stigma against Pokemon, is that we're basically slave owners.
Right, basically dogfighting. Of course, which unfortunately PETA's pretty much hanging on to that ideology. Yeah, yep. PETA's going against that, yeah.
All right, what about you, Will?
Like, a certain idea that I want Nintendo to explore upon, like, yeah, you pretty much got it right down. Slavery is definitely, like, the one thing in Pokemon. I mean, for me, like, I guess we're kind of going into that realm with game industry in general. Like, a lot of people kind of want to explore more themes in the realm of, like, suicide, mental health. Like, it's like with Celeste, like, again, the depression and all that. We're kind of approaching that realm of, like, approaching, like, mental illness, like depression, anxiety, even social issues, like more of the social health we're going to, like, how within human society, like with Celeste, or like Senua's Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice.
Yeah,
like Nintendo definitely, I think they can definitely talk about more onto, like, mental health, because, again, like, a lot of people still believe that mental health is still a stigma and nobody wants to get the proper help for it. I mean, not to be personal, but I for myself, I do see a therapist to get my stress out of the way in case, like, things get boiled up. So, like, I feel like Nintendo can definitely benefit in telling a much more mature but handled story of, like, mental health.
Yeah, that's a great one. I do love how Claude is, like, the first person of color to be a lord in Fire Emblem. I think that's a really cool thing that I'd like to see Nintendo do a little bit more of. But an actual theme, I think the theme of regret is something that Nintendo could really dive into. Majora's Mask, you see some characters, the way that they're coping with the end, and they all cope with it differently. I think I'd like to see more kind of focus on a main character who has lost something from the beginning of the story. I mean, we see in Awakening, Crom loses his sister, but he kind of gets back on the horse right away. I'd love to see, specifically in a Fire Emblem game, a character who has lost and it's their fault, and to see how they kind of deal with regrets from their past. I think that would be cool. It's something that everybody lives through, and we don't see it a whole lot in Nintendo games.
All right, there you go. So with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler!
Yes, last week we asked you if you were happy with the Pokemon designs, and I am just, listen, we are fanboys and fangirls here, but 71% of you are happy with them. That was astonishing to me. 14% said no, and 14% are in between. This goes back to the conversation Todd and I had before the podcast about Aquaman. Just because something's popular doesn't mean it's good.
Well, that's your opinion, Tyler, and you're entitled to it. So I'm just don't hate on the fans because they have opinions that are different than yours.
Oh, that's fine. You guys are entitled to your opinions. Just know that, you know, I disagree.
That's duly noted. All right. So for this poll question, what do we want to do? I mean, I really don't want to do the dark themes. But what do you think? What should we be talking about?
That's an excellent question. Do you think that the Philadelphia 76ers are going to win the Eastern Conference?
Stop. Okay, how about let's do the Nintendo music thing. Do you think Nintendo should have their own dedicated music channel on YouTube? Yes or no?
That's fair. Yeah, that's not fair. Yeah. Yep.
How do you think Nintendo should handle the music situation? Make a YouTube channel, put everything on iTunes/other music sites, or let the people post? Something like that. I'll let you phrase it how you want, Tyler.
Yeah.
All right. And so, of course, let us know what you think about what's going on with Fire Emblem Three Houses, and are you excited for Astral Chain? Are you excited for Shantae and the Seven Sirens? Do you think Banjo-Kazooie will come out in September? Are you going to watch the Nintendo on CBS series about the Nintendo World Championships? Let us know in the comments. So, for Tellius Tyler, Warrior Will, I am Triforce Todd, and ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. You've made it to the end of the level, so raise the flag. Thank you.